You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the 66 to 87 podcast. This is Tom Reed, joined as always by Dave Molinari. And a little bit later, we will be joined by DK Pittsburgh Sports hockey contributor Danny Shirey, who I love to say is also lives in Columbus. So we have the kind of the Pittsburgh West bureau out here in Columbus. Danny's doing a nice job for us. He'll be along to join us. But of course, we've got to lead off with the trip to Florida, which a lot of people, I think, Dave, had some trepidation. The Penguins going down there without some key players, obviously Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. In the first game, there was no Jake Guentzel, and all they do is pop in six goals to win the first game against the Lightning, the two-time defending champion Lightning. Now, granted, they just kept pouring them into an empty net late in the game, and then bounced back and then ended up losing the second game down there to Florida, who unfortunately was not raising any banners. They fall in overtime 5-4 in that game, but still, Dave, 3 points out of a possible four, given the injuries. They lose Brian Rust during the middle of the second game. I know you never want to blow a two-goal lead in the third period as they did against the Panthers, but I would say all in all, that's a pretty good takeaway from those first two games.
Yeah, I mean, I never would have guessed that going into the opener, they would return home somewhat disappointed to only have 3 points. You know, it's understandable that they would feel that way given that they had a two-goal lead, you know, with time running down in the third period in Florida on Thursday night. But all things considered, you know, under the circumstances, 3 points on the road against two pretty good clubs is not a bad haul at all.
No, it's not. And I thought, you know, the only down part, as we mentioned, and we'll probably get an update is with the Penguins, depending on when you're listening to this. The Penguins' home opener is Saturday, correct, Dave?
Yes, it is. They play Chicago.
Against the Marc-Andre Fleury and the Chicago Blackhawks. And that's where we'll probably get our first word back on the severity of Brian Rust's injury. As we mentioned, he left in the game after taking a pretty hard hit. Dave, I would think that's really the biggest downer here. I mean, again, you're going to blow points during the course of the season. It just happens. But that's probably, to me, would be the number one concern.
Yeah, gee, it'll be interesting to see how the Penguins can deal with an injury to a key player. I don't know that that's ever happened to them. Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible the way, you know, the body count is already underway with this team. You know, people who saw Rust after the game seemed to feel that there was no apparent sign of a significant injury. Obviously, we don't know anything at the time we're recording this. But you have to think there was something to it, because he's not the kind of guy who is going to just decide to sit out the third period of a game because he took a little bump. You know, that tells me that he was at least in enough discomfort that he felt that he couldn't contribute to his team. So, you know, I don't want to present an overly rosy scenario, but, you know, as I say, the people who saw him before the Penguins departed the arena on Thursday night seemed reasonably upbeat about a prognosis for him.
Dave, going back to the first game against Tampa, I don't know if they could have played better. I mean, the 6-2, again, the score gets a little it's a little flattering because of John Cooper just saying, okay, you're not going to play. You guys aren't going to play out here anyway. We'll just play without a goalie. The Penguins pumped in a couple of goals. And, of course, they scored a couple of goals as well to get it to the final 6-2. But that's as good a game with that lineup as you could possibly play. I mean, seemed like every player contributed.
Yes, and it's the way they have to play when they have the kind of watered-down lineup that they've been forced to rely on in these early days of the season. I mean, this isn't the Penguins from a few years back where, you know, or when they could count on scoring 6 or 7 or 8 goals if they needed to win a game. This is a team that's going to have to, you know, scratch out victories on the basis of, you know, good goaltending and sound team defense and winning the special teams battle. The victories aren't necessarily going to be pretty, but, you know, they all count the same. And as far as those empty net goals they scored, you don't get those unless, you know, you put yourself in a position to have the other team be pulling its goaltender. So, you know, and those count just as much as the ones where you put the puck past the goaltender. So I'm certainly not going to hold those, you know, against the Penguins that they scored 2 or 3 into an empty net.
No, hardly. I think one of the most impressive parts about it, you mentioned the team defense, they kept shots to the outside. Against a team like that, against a team like Tampa Bay that is so explosive, puck management so important. Dave, I don't recall Tampa Bay having – if they had 1 or 2 odd man breaks, that may be high. I thought the Penguins really did a nice job of protecting the puck in dangerous areas, made sure that they weren't caught out back and giving up odd man breaks. I thought that was one of the most impressive parts of the game.
Yeah, they really did, although I think it on some levels was an indictment of the Lightning as well, just because they have so much talent that when they're on their game, they're probably going to generate some odd man opportunities no matter how structurally sound you are defensively. I think it was pretty clear that was not that game was not the best that Tampa Bay has to offer.
And you lead us perfectly, the chemistry here leads perfectly into the question I was about to ask. Obviously, when you look at the schedule, like, oh, my God, you got to open in Tampa Bay against the defending champs, two-time defending champs. But, Dave, you in your 10 thoughts this weekend, fans will go out and read Dave's story, just some of his thoughts on the first week of the season. You brought up a great point about sometimes it's not bad to be on the road against the defending champ when they're raising a banner. Why is that?
Well, 3 of the past 4 teams that raised a Stanley Cup banner and did it in front of a crowd lost that game. The Lightning being the most recent of those. The Lightning a year ago during the pandemic did not have a full building when they kind of raised their banner. They kind of unfurled it for their home opener, but didn't really raise it all the way until they were able to have some fans in the building. But if you go all the way back to the Penguins after their championship in 2017, the only cup champion to win its home opener was Washington, which did it in 2018 by defeating Boston. You know, that's it's obviously when you raise a banner in front of your fans, it's, you know, it's an emotional night. It's kind of the closing of a chapter, pretty glorious chapter in your franchise's history. And, you know, I think that kind of takes away from your focus on the task at hand, and the Penguins did a very good job of exploiting that, I thought.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the players that have impressed us in the first couple of games this season, and kind of take a look at this. I'll just go right out and say it: ridiculous seven game homestand to start the season. When we come back on the 66-87.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to the 66-87 podcast. We're just getting rolling here. Please stick around. We're going to have one of our hockey contributors, Danny Shirey, will be joining us in the next segment. I want to correct something real quick. That's an 8-game homestand that will be starting on Saturday. We'll get to that in a minute. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Jeff Carter, who on Thursday night scored his 400th career goal. It was a deflection. It was kind of an own goal type of thing. The Panther put it in, but nonetheless, a 400th goal. Incredible achievement. And to me, it just, this first two games continues to show what a valuable acquisition he was late last season. He's being asked to kind of run the center of the first line. And again, as we said, 3 points for the team, 3 points for Jeff Carter, a goal and two assists in the first two games.
Yeah, I don't think the Penguins would even want to contemplate where they would be right now without Jeff Carter. I was quite skeptical of what he would be able to contribute at, you know, age 36 when they acquired him at the trade deadline. He has far exceeded all expectations that I had for him. Frankly, at this point, and it's still very early, we don't know what kind of toll an 82 sure. game season will take on him. But, you know, if he still wants to play, I don't see any reason why he couldn't get another contract, whether it's from the Penguins or another team, you know, after this season. He's been impressive in just about every way imaginable.
Yeah, and he's, you know, there were some people in the summer that, like, why wouldn't you expose him? And again, to expose him in the expansion draft. And again, Ron Francis probably isn't taking a 36 or 37 year old player off your hands. I wasn't taking any chances. There was no way I was exposing Jeff Carter. I just think he's too valuable. And at the time, we didn't know that about these injuries to the top two centers. But man, this would be a rough spot to be in right now without him. And Dave, I thought it was kind of impressive. They flashed the graphic of the top, five or six 400 goal scorers currently playing. three of them are Penguins. Jeff Carter and who are those other two guys? Lemieux, it's Crosby and Malkin. It just goes to show you what Penguin fans, just another way of showing you what a great run this franchise has had in that era.
So you mean one of them is playing? Jeff Carter
playing. One of them is playing, but currently, well, I guess, yeah, currently. We expect both to eventually be back. But again, Carter has just been, to me, so good and really started things out the other night. You think about it, that was a tight game. There wasn't any scoring in the first period of the game. In the first game in Tampa, the Penguins had pushed the advantage, but it was Carter who really got things started, stealing the puck behind the net on a play where Vasilevskiy was trying to move the puck along the rim and along the wall, and passes it out to a guy that I want to talk a little bit about now, Danton Heinen. Dave, every year we go through, you always have these kind of couple of early surprises, guys you're like, wow, he's off to a good start. Now, I'm going to caution fans before we get too heavily into this that we, at this time last year, we would have probably been talking about Mark Jankowski because he had a very good start. But Dave, Danton Heinen, and he's back, Dominic Simone, I think have played reasonably well. Heinen with two goals, one in each game. Simone has been solid. He's got a goal, I believe, in the first game. Set up a goal last night. Your thoughts on those two players and their contributions early on?
Yeah, before we get into those, I'd just like to reinforce or reiterate for anyone who cares. I was one of those who would have exposed Jeff Carter the expansion draft. I don't think that there was much chance that Seattle would have taken a player his age. You know, unless they were interested primarily in his intangibles. And I thought that Brandon Tanev brought an element to the game that the Penguins really needed, that they would really miss his energy. At the same time, I wonder, I mean, they obviously were aware that there were issues with Malkin and Crosby. And, you know, even if that hadn't become public knowledge yet.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder if that was something that was factored into their decision. That they did not want to get down yet another center, you know, when they presumably knew that they'd be starting the season without Malkin, and had to think there was, you know, at least an outside possibility that Crosby would either not be available at the start of the season or that he would be at less than full strength.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't know that, but I don't think that's an unreasonable perspective to have on it.
Yeah.
As far as Heinen and Simone, you know, I don't think we should pencil in Heinen to stay on the goal per game pace over 82 games. That, you know, might be a bit much to expect, but you know, he has shown that, you know, some goal scoring ability, particularly when he was with the Bruins. Dominic Simone is what he was, you know, the first go round in Pittsburgh. It infuriates a considerable segment of the fan base that even when has been used in a prominent position, like on Sidney Crosby's wing, that he's not a reliable goal scorer, but he is a sound two-way player. He does a lot of things well. You know, unfortunately for him, in terms of his money-making and for his team, goal scoring isn't on that list. But that doesn't mean that he can't contribute, and he certainly, you know, was a factor in the 3 points that they took out of Florida.
Yeah, back to Heinen for a second. I loved the second goal he scored, the goal against Bobrovsky over the shoulder, just under the crossbar. Pretty nice shot. So for those two guys, a good start. And as we said, Dave, they're going to need everybody right now. They're going to need contributions from just about everybody to kind of get through this time. I think we expect Sidney Crosby at some point during this homestand, again, leading into our next topic. How couldn't we? The Penguins are about to start. Well, I said, depending again when you're listening to us, on Saturday, they opened an 8-game homestand. 8 games, Dave. I can't imagine what management and ownership thought when they saw that, and also season ticket holders that thought, we've got to go 8 straight times, and they're like day, you know, one day a game, one day off, one day a game, one day off. That's way too many, in my opinion, Dave. Your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I believe it's a franchise record for the length of a homestand, and I strongly suspect that one of the victims of this homestand will be their sellout streak.
Yeah.
Which I stands at, I want to say 632 games, I believe. That obviously that includes some sellouts last season when the capacity of the building was extremely limited and doesn't take into account the home games when they weren't allowed to have fans. But regardless, every available seat in the place has been sold for the past 13 seasons or so, which is a pretty remarkable run. But I think when you consider that there will be so many home games shoehorned into the next few weeks, that some of the Penguins' most prominent players and big gate attractions will be missing. It just seems like, there's so much conspiring to dissuade people from attending games that I think that sellout streak could be in real jeopardy.
Yeah, and beyond that, coaches hate having long, really long homestands because you don't want guys getting just like, you don't want them getting into too much of a routine as far as being home all the time. I think 4 or 5 is a nice number. Once you get past that, you're starting to worry about overstaying a homestand, I think, in hockey. And do we have any sense of why this happened? It's not like they were building a new building or had to play a bunch of games on the road like Seattle and the Islanders. Is there any sense of why this happened?
No, I never got a good explanation. And my understanding is that the team officials weren't particularly thrilled with it for the reasons you've laid out. Players also, for better or for worse, they like to get on the road.
Sure.
I don't think they would necessarily appreciate an 8-game road trip either. But, it's just part of the culture that, you're home for a while and then on the road for a while. And especially teams on the East Coast tend to not really have protracted homestands or road trips. So I can't believe that this will work to the Penguins' benefit in any way.
No, and they were a very good home team in last year. And, of course, that's last year. But we'll see how this works out. It does bear watching it over the course of this year, obviously they're going to, after this is over, they're going to have to make up with a lot of road games, not necessarily 8 at a time. But it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by Danny Shirey, our new contributor at DK Pittsburgh Sports. Please stay with us. Podcast, and we are now joined by our newest addition to DK Sports, our hockey writer, writing a weekly segment for us, Drive to the Net, very analytically driven. And I know there's a lot of hockey readers out there that are thirsting for more analytical stuff. And Danny Shirey is definitely delivering in his first couple of posts. Danny, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm really glad to join you guys and talk some hockey with you.
Well, I'm just glad that we the DK Sports has a Columbus bureau now, because you and I both live there. So we are basically DK Pittsburgh Sports West. Are you from the Columbus area, and how did you develop an interest in Pittsburgh sports living in Columbus?
Yeah, so I grew up in Columbus and obviously still live here now, but my father was born in Squirrel Hill back in the 60s, and you know, he lived there for 25, 30 years of his life. So, you know, when I was growing up, and it was always watching the Steelers every Sunday and watching the Penguins throughout the winter, and even watching those terrible Buccos throughout the summer. So that's just been instilled in me since I was super young, and I've always had a love for sports. So I just the black and gold is a part of me now, and I consider Pittsburgh my second home.
You coach in suburban Columbus. How does your coaching background kind of help you in analyzing the game for what you're doing here at DK Sports?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that a lot of the time it's easy to come across some of these stats or metrics and just use them as blanket statements. But because I have this coaching background, it's a lot easier to kind of see how those metrics come about. And it's not to just deal with them in absolutes, but, you know, you're able to understand why things might be happening. And I think just having a different perspective of being down between the benches and kind of knowing those little nuances that are going on with your players and your schemes and just everything that's going on with the rink, it adds some much needed context to forming the bigger picture.
How did you get into that? I'm always interested. We've had Allison Lucan on, we've had Dom Lecision on from The Athletic. And I'm always intrigued how someone kind of gets into this, how a hockey fan kind of gets into the analytical side of it. How did it work with you?
So it was around the time the Penguins were going back to back when I really started to get a little deeper into doing hockey analysis. But the biggest thing that stuck out to me was that, you know, we would hear people all the time reference specific players as being, you know, great defensive players, even though we didn't have specific metrics or statistics that showed you that was the case. And, you know, as great as, you know, takeaways or blocks might be, you still don't necessarily see how that's impacting the quality of chances that are going against you. So it was just really more so that I wanted to be smarter about the game, and I wanted to know more about the game. And in turn, I found that I actually just love going through data and kind of connecting those dots. So, but I think it is really funny because I am absolutely terrible at math. And you know, everybody's always like, oh, like you're the analytics guy, you're the math guy. And I'm like, trust me, I am not the math guy. But it's kind of funny that I became the analytics guy after that.
Dave, go ahead.
Danny, how did you get into writing? And when you're writing more technically oriented things like analytics stories, is there a particular challenge to it, knowing that some of your readers might not completely understand the, you know, the concepts that you're trying to get across?
Yeah, so I initially started writing back when I was in the sixth or seventh grade. It was just a random Saturday, and I was watching a Pirates Brewers game. And afterward, I was like, I've got a bunch of thoughts that I just need to get off my chest. So I went ahead and started my own little Blogspot blog. And from there, I started writing about the Pirates and Penguins. Never really got into writing about the Steelers too much. But, you know, I did that pretty frequently for a couple of years until I got into high school. And, you know, I wrote for my high school's newspaper as well as wrote some stories for our yearbook. And then I went off into college and studied journalism and sports management for a few years. And then, you know, after that, as I kind of went into adulthood, I had kind of lost my passion for writing. But a couple of seasons ago, at the beginning of the year, I was like, you know, I've got some thoughts I need to get off my chest again. And I put together a piece on Patrick Hornquist, and I got a lot of good feedback on it. And ever since then, I've been writing again. And, you know, I honestly, the reason I keep doing it is just because I see so many people that are telling me that they're learning from it and they're taking value from it. Otherwise, you know, I can sit here and talk to myself or bug my girlfriend with all my thoughts.
You posted a piece on Thursday on Marcus Pedersen. If there are some people listening who haven't had a chance to read it yet, could you give them kind of a rundown of the major points that you tried to make in that story?
Yeah, absolutely. So Pedersen's kind of a divisive figure on the Penguins because, you know, he's not a very sexy player and his puck skills have never really developed it the way that a lot of people thought he could have. But the reality is that there is not a defenseman on the Penguins that has a greater impact on insulating the slot in the front of the net. And as we all know, that's the most dangerous area of the ice in hockey. So, you know, he does have a couple of shortcomings with him being a little bit underweight. He's only 177 pounds, even though he is 6'3". But he's able to make up for that lack in size and physicality that he has with just being such a smart and cerebral hockey player. And none of the stuff he does is flashy or even looks good. And a lot of the stuff just goes unnoticed. But it all leads to part of the bigger picture of, you know, keeping the puck away from the dangerous areas of the ice.
And now we'll give you a question that's probably one of the most popular among Penguins followers and also one of the most difficult to try and answer. Do you think the Penguins will prove to be a playoff team this season?
I do, and there's two reasons for that. The first being is that I'm not as high on the Metro division as a lot of people are. We know the Islanders are going to play a sound defensive game all throughout the year under Barry Trotz. But as far as the rest of the division goes, I think there's a lot of question marks, you know, for every team. You know, a couple of people have been talking about New Jersey and making some noise this year, but I'm not sold on their defensive core. But as far as the Penguins are concerned, I definitely see them as a playoff team. And the biggest reason being is that this is the first year in a long time that they don't have any players on their roster, whether it be at forward or at defense, that are really sinking them when they're out there. And, you know, when you don't have guys like Jack Johnson or Mark Jankowski out there, getting them out of the lineup is almost as impactful as having a decent value guy, you know, further up your lineup.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this, Danny. And I'm, again, intrigued by the fact that you are a coach. So you, obviously, this is part of your job is your eyes are behind the bench. But sometimes when you watch a game and then you go on Evolving Wild or whatever site that you're going to look at, are there times where what you watched and the numbers that you see different? And then how do you work that out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of times where I've watched a game and thought a player had an absolutely horrible game. And then I'll go, you know, onto Natural Stat Trick, for instance, and I'll see that the Penguins dominated in terms of trading chances while that player was on the ice. And, you know, that's not to say that player had a great game, even though the Penguins controlled play while they were on the ice. But I think that's where analytics and, you know, going through film really play hand in hand with each other, because you can go, okay, I see that the Penguins played well with this player on the ice. Now let's go back and see if he made any impact on creating those chances or suppressing those chances. So, you know, it's not an all or nothing thing with either of them, but I think combining the two, it really goes a long way in forming that solid picture and a complete picture, so that you're not just making baseless claims.
Oh, very good. Good stuff from Danny Shirey. I hope our Penguins fans, our readers get a chance to read his first couple entries that he's had, the Drive the Net columns, and he will be contributing through us throughout the season. So it's welcome aboard and good to have another guy in Columbus. And that's it for us this week on the 66-80 podcast. For Danny Shirey, for Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll talk to you next week.